Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at.
We took on the machine and the NRA and won.
The race to replace retiring Senator Dick Durbin is heating up. We sit down with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who just announced her bid. Lawmakers in Springfield are considering a measure that would allow community colleges to offer bachelor's degrees in high-demand fields.
This so-called magic wand is a financial tool called tax increment financing, better known as TIF.
But what exactly is a TIF district and how does it work? Our WTTW News Explained series has the answer. And now to some of today's top stories. Indiana authorities are asking for the public's help identifying a body pulled from Lake Michigan near the Indiana Dunes. A fisherman about 2 miles offshore from Central Beach found the body Saturday morning. The person appears to have been missing for an extended period of time. Officials have released a photograph of a distinctive ring on the person's right index finger and said they were wearing red and black pajama pants and black socks. We've got information for how you can contact authorities on our website. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul is urging businesses and schools to stand firm on their DEI policies. Raoul joined three fellow attorneys general for a virtual summit earlier today where they said opponents of diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts are misconstruing a Supreme Court ruling to falsely bolster their anti-DEI arguments.
Your efforts to make your schools and workplaces and organizations more inclusive and welcoming to everyone have the positive impact on the lives that you touch, but more importantly, positive impact on your institutions and your organizations. Research shows that these efforts make your businesses and schools and organizations better environments for learning, more profitable, and more successful.
Raoul and New York AG Letitia James have sued the Trump administration over its threat to education funding over DEI programs. The NBA on NBC will have a familiar face starting this fall, Michael Jordan. NBC announced Jordan will serve as a special contributor when the 2025-2026 season kicks off. In a statement, Jordan says, "The NBA on NBC was a meaningful part of my career, and I'm excited about being a special contributor to the project. I'm looking forward to seeing you all when the NBA on NBC launches this October." After more than two decades on TNT, the season's games will be split among NBC, ESPN, and Amazon. Up next, one-on-one with U.S. Senate hopeful Robin Kelly. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
The race to replace retiring Senator Dick Durbin is officially on. 2 weeks after the 80-year-old announced he would not seek a sixth term, three candidates have already launched campaigns. The growing field includes Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton and two U.S. representatives, Robin Kelly and Raja Krishnamoorthy. The moves signal a big change in Illinois' political landscape, as those two congressional seats will also be opening up. Here to discuss the changes coming to Illinois politics and her candidacy for the U.S. Senate is Congresswoman Robin Kelly, whose second district covers the far south side and south suburbs. Welcome back to Chicago Tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you've represented that district for more than a decade. What's your best message to voters statewide who may not be as familiar with you?
Well, my district actually starts on the south side of Chicago and goes south of Danville and west of Pontiac. So I almost feel like I have Illinois in my district, which I love the diversity, but I think that helps me because I understand many different voices within the state of Illinois. I have 4,500 farms, and as I said, the south side of Chicago and a swath of the south suburbs.
Yeah, quite a range of constituents
yes,
there.
Quite a range.
What are some of the major accomplishments you see as making you the right person for this job?
Well, I know that I've been an effective leader on every level of government. I've worked for local government, state government. I work for Alexi Janulius in the treasurer's office. I was a state rep, and I work for the county. And I'm very proud of my accomplishments. On the federal government, I've worked on health care issues. I've done a lot of work around maternal mortality and morbidity. So it was our work that led Medicaid coverage going from 60 days to a year, and that will definitely help save lives. We lose too many women to maternal mortality, and especially Black women, and this will definitely change that. I've done a lot of work on gun violence prevention. This is what I ran on, and when we passed the first bill in 30 years, my part of it was the trafficking and the store purchasing that Chicago has to deal with. Then I've done other consumer protection type bills, done some work around artificial intelligence and cybersecurity.
In your campaign announcement, you said you've been an underdog your whole life. Do you see yourself as an underdog in this race?
Oh, I've always been underestimated and an underdog. When I ran for state rep, I ran against a 10-year incumbent. When I ran for treasurer, I ran against a multimillionaire to become the Democratic nominee. I didn't win the race. And then when I ran for Congress, it was me and about 16 other people that ran in that race. I'm used to tough fights. I'm used to tough races. But I'm ready.
Yeah, no stranger to a crowded field,
no.
and we may be seeing one here. Well, you know, you're facing at least two opponents with fairly formidable resources. Mm-hmm. Congressman Krishnamurthy has some $20 million in his campaign fund. Lieutenant Governor Stratton has the support of our billionaire mm-hmm. governor. Are you confident you can overcome those hurdles?
You know, I would not have gotten in the race if I didn't feel like I could win and that I would have, I know I'll have the resources I need to win. I'm very confident about that.
You were the first Black woman to chair the state Democratic Party. You didn't run for a second term after the governor reportedly...
Well, I ran for a second term.
Well, yes, you did. But, you know, you stepped aside sort of after the governor made clear he had a different preferred candidate. Looking back on it now, how do you reflect on that power struggle?
Well, I know I did a very good job as a state party chair, and actually I stepped back the day before the vote just to actually relieve the people that were supporting me. That is why I did it, not because I'm not a fighter, because I am. But, you know, it happened. It's behind me. I've moved forward. I know I did a good job. People tell me all the time, even, you know, now.
Yeah.
So I'm confident and feel good about what I was able to contribute the time I was there.
Well, you know, in addition to Senator Durbin, longtime Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky also stepping aside after the current term, some Democratic voters say they want a new generation of leaders within the party. What's your reaction to that?
I think we need a mix of people in the party. I mean, we're losing two icons that did a lot for the state of Illinois, but I think we need a mix of people. I think there's different lenses that need to be heard from and need to be seen.
Well, you know, the Republican Party currently holds, obviously, the presidency, both houses of Congress. Should you be elected and should that balance of power, you know, stay the same after the midterms, how would you try to overcome those obstacles for Democratic lawmakers?
Well, I've been in Congress 12 years, and only 4 of those years have I been in the majority. So you get used to working around those obstacles, working across, you know, the aisle with those who work with you and share some of your values. And I've done all of that. I've passed legislation under Trump and Biden, you know, and I think that's what you need to do. It's not like in Illinois where everybody, Democrat, Democrat, Democrat. You really have to learn to work with everyone, not give up on your values, but still where you can work together, work together.
Well, and as a lot of folks, you know, in Congress, Republicans in Congress, particularly in the House, have moved farther to the right. Has that gotten more difficult for you in recent years?
I work with who I can work with. You know, I've had Republicans call me and say, would you do this bill with me or share this bill with me or sponsor this bill with me, and who I can't work with, I don't.
It's been reported that Congresswoman Lauren Underwood also interested in this seat. If she jumps in, that's 3 members of the Illinois delegation that would be running. Could that complicate, you know, legislative efforts on behalf of your constituents?
I don't know if it would complicate. We're still in the House and we're still doing our job, so I don't know if that would complicate. I'm still going to do what I do, and I'm sure my other 2 colleagues are going to continue on with what they do.
You know, just 5 Black women have served in the United States Senate. What does that say to you about the challenges Black women face still in politics?
Well, it's very difficult. Just the barriers and the obstacles and, you know, what people think what we can accomplish, but we have accomplished it. When you look at our growing numbers in the House, and we did grow in the Senate for the first time, two black women are serving. So we have to keep pushing forward and running for office, and that's how we win. We have to, you know, stay in the game, get off the sidelines.
Yeah. But how do you feel? You know, you've been in this role, as we said, for, you know, more than a decade. How do you feel about giving up your seat in Congress to run this race?
It was a hard decision. I'm not, you know, going to say it wasn't. I thought about a lot of things, but I also know that I am an effective leader and well qualified to take on the challenge of running and also to be the U.S. Senator. I've worked with many senators already, worked a lot with Senator Durbin, so I know I can do the job, no question in my mind.
You know, your campaign is still in its early days. What kind of work are you doing or planning to get started on to get out and meet voters all around the state?
I've already started. I've done town hall meetings in and out of my district. I've spoken at Democratic Party events and calling.
I can imagine. A lot of time on the phone. Yes. For something like this. Well, we've got about a minute left, but, you know, if you win the seat, what would your priorities be once you take office?
I carry a huge health care portfolio now, and I still see it necessary to carry that in the Senate. I look at gun violence as a public health crisis, so that would still be a part of what I'm trying to conquer, but also a part of it would be fighting the Trump administration and J.D. Vance, because they'll still be in office, and some of the cuts they want to make. I feel like we all do better when we all do better. So I want to do everything I can to lift my constituents, whether they voted for me or not.
Well, it's going to be a long race, and I know we hope to talk to you throughout it.
But I look forward to it.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman Kelly.
Thank you.
Up next, what is a TIF district and how does it work? WTTW News explains right after this. The share of property taxes collected by the city and then claimed by Chicago's tax increment finance districts grew 47% between 2019 and 2023, according to a WTTW News analysis. That massive growth funneled $5.84 billion into the special districts that are designed to spur redevelopment and eradicate blight. The report for 2024 is not set to be published until July. Now, you may have heard the term, but what exactly is a TIF district? Heather Sharone answers the question in tonight's edition of WTTW News Explains.
Once upon a time, the king, mayor of a mystical land named Chicago came across a magic wand that possessed truly awesome powers. This so-called magic wand is a financial tool called tax increment financing, better known as TIF. With just a flick of the wrist, the TIF wand makes a giant pool of taxpayer dollars appear, as long as they promise to use that money to make the city a better place to live. TIF wasn't invented in Chicago, but former Mayor Richard M. Daley perfected it as he worked to transform Mud City into a gleaming metropolis. Here's how this deceptively simple tool works. City officials determine an area is particularly blighted. Maybe its roads and sidewalks are in bad shape, or its air is rife with pollution, or it's strewn with vacant buildings. They declare it a TIF district, a distinction which stays in place for 23 years and is there to promote public and private projects. Let's make it simple. Say you buy a house for $100,000 and set aside $2,500 to cover your annual property tax bill. Every cent will go to critical services like police, fire, libraries, and schools. But just as you sign on the dotted line, city officials include your home in a brand new TIF district. 10 years go by. Your home has doubled in value, and your property tax bill has gone up. The original share is still funding crucial city services, just as it did a decade ago. But the rest, the tax increment, or the amount your taxes have gone up since the TIF was declared, has been flowing into a special account the mayor and his friends on the Chicago City Council can use to subsidize projects in your area. Millions for a new road? You got it. A new housing development? No problem. And the people of Chicago live happily ever after. Or maybe not. As more than $1 billion every year flows away from Chicago's schools, parks, and libraries and into a TIF account instead, everyone's taxes go up to keep those critical agencies solvent. At the same time, while TIFs are meant for blighted areas, sometimes already affluent parts of the city make it onto the TIF list, gaining a boost from the TIF funds alongside any private investors seizing on the opportunities in the growing area, often leading to gentrification. TIF districts are a powerful tool, to be sure, but they're no magic wand. A fairy tale ending isn't guaranteed around the corner, but a budget deficit dragon sometimes is.
You can see more of our Emmy Award-winning series, WTTW News Explains, on our website. Up next, details over a debate on a bill that would allow community colleges in Illinois to offer some four-year degrees. The majority of community college students say they plan to transfer to a four-year university, 79% to be precise, but only 35% successfully do. That's according to research from the Partnership for College Completion, which also found that only 20% of those students complete a bachelor's degree. New legislation aims to increase those rates by offering four-year degrees at community colleges, but critics say instead efforts should be made in improving the transfer process and are concerned it could cut into some universities' enrollment. Joining us with more is Jim Reed, Executive Director of the Illinois Community College Trustees Association. We also invited a number of opponents of the bill, but they declined our request. Jim Reed, thank you for being with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for having me.
For folks who might not be familiar with it, what does this legislation aim to do?
Yeah, it really is about creating pathways for students and giving them an opportunity to not only meet workforce needs, but also to fulfill their educational goals. And so we find that there are a number of barriers that have prevented students from doing so. We have seen that this has worked in 24 other states. And so after researching this for almost nearly 6 years, we have come up with legislation that we believe addresses some of those barriers and provides an opportunity for students who otherwise wouldn't be able to go on to public universities and go on to get those degrees to be able to do so and meet their obligations at home and in their communities.
Yeah, I mean, to your point about those barriers, how do you see this potential change as helping to improve outcomes for students?
Yes. Well, you have to sort of look at what the three barriers are, and really the most prominent ones are those around cost to go to public university or private university. We have a number of places where we have bachelor degree deserts. Those are places where students do not have access to a public university, and if they are available, they're substantial distance away. And then the last is really in terms of time and mode of delivery. If you are a working parent, if you are a first generation student and you want to get your bachelor's degree but you can't access it geographically, this would give you an opportunity to stay in your community, to continue to work and feed your family, to take care of your kids, and to get your degree in your community. And we have found that the survey results, we've interviewed a number of students, nearly 2,400, and almost 80% of them say that they would pursue a bachelor's degree if offered in their community. So we believe that that provides an opportunity for them to meet their needs while addressing many of the workforce needs that are apparent in our communities across the state of Illinois.
Yeah, are there particular fields of study, and to your point about those deserts, parts of the state where you think this change would be particularly beneficial?
Yes, in terms of those specific workforce needs, we've looked at sort of critical areas like nursing, early childhood education, cybersecurity, manufacturing. These are all areas that are struggling to find qualified talent. And so that's why the importance of this legislation is really focused on workforce needs, the application process that community colleges would have to go through to meet those needs and be able to offer those is very rigorous, but they are really very narrowly focused. It provides us to meet the needs of empty hospital beds that have plagued our communities, closed classrooms, unfilled cybersecurity roles, and manufacturing lines that are sitting idle. So this is very narrowly tailored to address those needs in those communities.
Despite that tailoring, you know, a lot of four-year colleges and universities in Illinois oppose this idea. They're obviously facing pre-existing enrollment and financial challenges of their own. Is there a way to prevent siphoning off students from those schools?
Yeah, well, I think we need to be very clear that the research shows that the students who are attaining their bachelor's degree through the community colleges states across the country are not your traditional students. They're not the 18 to 24 year olds. These are individuals who are out in the workplace that are looking to increase their salary, their ability to move up in their workplace. This is the 28 to 32 year old student. And so those are not the students that we're competing with in against our public universities. Secondly, if we look at the statistics across the states, you'll see that even those that have had community college baccalaureates for decades, less than 1% of the degrees that are coming out of those states are coming from the community college baccalaureates. The only exception to that would be Florida, which is about at 8%, and they've been around for more than two decades.
Well, as we mentioned, a report from the Partnership for College Completion found some 79% of students start off intending to transfer to a four-year school, just 35% do. Those rates are even lower for students of color and low-income students. And that report found just 20% graduate with a bachelor's. You know, is this legislation the right way to help improve those numbers? Do you think that that could be one of the outcomes here?
It is certainly a way. We would certainly encourage our traditional partnership programs. We know that there are a lot of very constructive and very complex programs that exist and are very successful. The 2+2 programs, the 3+1s, we think that those should continue on. But this is really about meeting the needs of those students that aren't going anywhere, that aren't participating in those programs. And again, it's workforce-based. We believe those students would substantially benefit from having this kind of an option. So it really isn't overlap. It's really about enhancing. It's not either or. It's about having both of these. And again, in states that have implemented, we've seen that kind of partnership. We've seen the increase and ongoing growth of the partnership. But at the same time, we've also seen the growth of the baccalaureate and students who would otherwise, you know, not go anywhere, decide to go ahead and get their degree.
We've got about 30 seconds left, but, you know, as I'm sure you know well, this has been a fairly hotly contested issue in Springfield. Do you think there is a way to craft a compromise that universities and lawmakers can get on board with?
Absolutely. When we started this conversation nearly 6 years ago, but even more recently in the past couple of years, we've encouraged the public universities and community colleges to work together. We believe we have legislation crafted now that provides an agreement that deals with issues around duplication so that there are not duplication of services within their various regions and various parts of the state. There's sufficient caps to ensure that the public universities can become comfortable with this. And I think the goal is to make sure that all students have an opportunity to achieve their full potential in terms of their education. We know that the public universities, the private universities, and community colleges all want that same goal. So it's really been great under the leadership of the governor to make that happen and to bring us all together. And we think we are very close to making that a reality here in Illinois.
And I'm sure you will be keeping an eye on this closely, as will we, but that's all the time we have. Jim Reed, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed the opportunity.
A few notes before we go. WTTW was honored by the Chicago Headline Club with 11 Peter Lizagor Awards for exemplary journalism, including WTTW News reporters Patty Wetley and Nicole Cardos for science and technology reporting, and Brandis Friedman for crime and justice reporting. She's still out celebrating. That's why she's off tonight. Okay, not really. Congratulations as well to the WTTW Chicago Stories, firsthand, local production, and digital teams for their awards. Also tonight, we note the passing of former longtime WTTW director Dick Carter. Here he is back in 1982 working on the beloved WTTW auction. Dick also spent many nights in our control room directing Chicago Tonight. He worked here for 33 years and was an Emmy, Peabody, and Lizagor Award winner, among many others. In addition to a plethora of arts-related programs, he was perhaps best known as the director of Soundstage with artists like Ella Fitzgerald, the Doobie Brothers, Tina Turner, and many, many more. Dick was a warm, friendly, and kind person. Our condolences to his partner of 60 years, his husband, John. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.